take an intro.
Hey, how you doing, honey? How you doing today?
Good, good.
How was the kids? How about this one? You like this one?
Oh, yeah, that one's pretty.
That's pretty right there. I like the blue balls.
Blue Balls Pod.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Blue Balls. Season 10.
The blue ball. The blue balls.
Season 10. 10.
Like the curve on the bottom of a certain famous jazz bar in the West Village. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got Blue Note Balls. My name is Jake Beckard, and I'm your intrepid co-host, and I'm joined this week, as every week, by my intrepid co-host, Mr. Trey Fillmore. Trey, hey, how are we doing this week?
What stupid fucking bit and conversation we're going to... What do you want to talk about? Oh, the Oscars were the other night. Oh, what about... the State of the Union. Oh, how about that? A woman
good,
who did
good.
The rebuttal. Oh, goodness. Oh.
Oh, yeah. She got a lot of people clutching their pearls, huh?
Oh, you want to. Oh, it's that.
Kate Middleton. How about Kate Middleton?
Kate Middleton. Oh, what happened?
Photoshops.
Wow. Oh, so much fun we're having. Riffing and raving.
Trey, you sound like you've got something else on your mind.
I do. But you know what? I was going to say, I didn't sleep well last night because I decided to... it had nothing to do with the events of this weekend, but I decided to watch the movie Akira under the influence at like 11 p.m. So,
oh my God, that movie's so fucking good.
It was transcendental. But of course, it was like fucking, you know... it's not like a
sweet. Had you seen it before?
Lullaby. I saw half of it in theater camp in high school. That's it.
Lol. That's funny.
And
the front half, I assume, right?
Yeah,
like, not the back half.
I was not ready.
So you didn't see all the tumors?
No. Oh my God.
I learned the word for that shape recently. My friend had learned the word for that shape. There's a word for it. I don't remember what it was.
Oh, I've great.
The word, but there's a word. The shape is, you know, like a bunch of grapes. You know, that shape has a particular name and a particular designation. And that's also and there are only two things that fall under that designation, and they are grapes and tumors.
Multi-bulbous or something like that. Sure.
Yeah, but it's better than that. It's doper than that.
Exciting stuff. Well, you know, it's I was like, of course, like,
so you didn't sleep well because you were busy watching one of the greatest films of all time.
Yeah, but I'm in, like, I got my second wind now. It's like when you like barely sleep at a sleepover, or you start like you're so tired you're like wired. That's where I am.
Yes, for sure. That's where you're at. Awesome. That's exactly where I need you, because we need to talk about it. We need to break this down. A 2-1 loss at home. First ever home loss. First ever home opener loss for NYCFC. Excuse me, New York City FC. First season to start with three losses in a row. 0 points. Bottom of the table. Was this, Trey, to your mind? I mean, like, you were throwing this language around at the match. Do you stick by it days after that this is the second most embarrassing NYCFC loss in franchise history?
Yeah, why not? Of course. It's certainly at home, yeah.
Sure.
But it can't be anything else. I just think in context, you know? And just to add to your beautiful list of stats, I believe we're the only team in MLS this year that has lost a game while leading at halftime. And Jacob, there are 268 teams that have started, thanks to Hudson River Blue for either doing this or compiling this or amplifying it, but 268 teams that have made the playoffs in MLS. Guess how many have lost the first three games of a season? That's a long season. You know, as some of the players told mm-hmm. us, you know, that's, we got time. Guess.
I'm going to guess 15.
12.
Wow. I really thought I was lowballing it.
Nope. a gentleman's 4.47% chance. Oh my God. Or occurrence, I should say, not chance. It's not probability. But
boy, that's not great.
Yeah, and
well, that makes us lucky number 13, Trey.
When I saw that, it was like, oh baby, mm-hmm. It's extremely sobering. It kind of cuts through all the we have time. We have to integrate these bodies. Oh, we've played really well. Just the results weren't there. Well, guess what? Three losses in a row is not the foot you want to start off on if you're trying to make the playoffs. And when you say and tell us multiple times that the expectation year over year is the playoffs, it's so below expectation. It's disgusting. Mm-hmm. It's awful. It was just awful. I mean, you know what?
Disgusting.
I was kind of surprised by my own reaction. You were sitting next to me. You came to the match. We'll get into that.
Yes.
We
will.
I don't know. Why not?
Into the shock and awe that I inspired walking around in the press box.
I kind of don't want to even talk about the game, so I'm talking around it.
I know, who does?
But
I'm with you.
I let out the...
talk about your reaction.
When that last goal happened, I let out the longest and loudest laugh of my life. Just like deafening, like I almost lost my voice from the guttural laughing that was coming out of me. But you know what I realized in that?
I feel like there's a scene in Akira like that, you know?
Yeah, I was watching the movie and I came to like this understanding where I was like, I was laughing like, I believe, I joke that I was trying to choke myself out of air, but what I really think it was is like my body trying to squeeze any ounce of joy that could have come from that match, like finding any moment of happiness, because I was laughing so hard and not getting any of the serotonin. Like I was laughing. It was the most bizarre, one of the most bizarre moments of my life. I was laughing so hard and like not feeling anything. It was so weird. And it was so weird, like that moment in the stadium. I'll let you describe it, but like right below the press box, Roxfontein, the first, second president of the Third Rail, great guy, he's had those seats forever, you know, always see him like cheering with the kids and whatever, getting them involved or whatever, and he was just simply like almost like he was on a street corner preaching, just like, this is not enough, this is a disgrace, and like just that image cutting through the rain and the cold and the wind and the silence of the stadium and the cheers, the cushing out jeers that were happening, and the everyone was dumbstruck around us, of course, but it was such a it's one of the most surreal moments I've ever felt being at one of these games, surely. Just and that negative energy really hung, I mean, obviously throughout, like it's still in the air, but truly just thick. It was thick. But yeah, well, you came, and you never do, so you were like a celebrity, and I need to take notes. Everyone's fucking sick of me, but they see you. There was like a blessing to meet you.
There's a real, the novelty wore off remarkably quickly when they figured out that I have absolutely nothing to say or to contribute to the experience, as does everybody else as they listen to this podcast. Yeah, it was fun. That was a good time. It's so funny to me, Trey, because, you know, I've been your friend for a very long time. And I think if given the... It's not the first thing that I say about you, but something that I would characterize about you that I wouldn't characterize most of my other friends is Trey is a world-class talent at getting mad at sports.
Oh, that's very true. I'm thinking of the exact story I know you're...
Yeah, I won't embarrass you with it, but but that's the one, right? That's the that you are so passionately attached to the results that when you let out that long loud laugh, that was a real shocker for me, because that was my reaction. You know, I'm very comfortable with the sort of absurdity of it. I was like, I'll tell you, for 10 minutes before that second goal got scored, I was like, I kind of want to see them get the second goal.
Yeah, that was hiding in there, yeah.
You know, like I had a secret sort of like morbid desire to get that to say, look, we already fucked it. We don't deserve the point. I wanted to take the bloom off the rose. I wanted there to be no doubt. I wanted there to be no arguing for exactly what we heard from the press conference after the match, which is to say, like, all part of the plan, right? Blah, 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 blah. Everything is fine. I wanted to give the lie to that defense. And then they did it. And I was like, oh, look, there it is. I was already fuguing. You know, it's kind of like when you're storming Normandy and you get gut shot and you're like, oh, look, there are my guts. Mm-hmm. There's my intestine. Ha ha. Well, how strange, how surreal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my brain is already flooding me just with dope, with natural dope to soften the injury. But then to hear you go through that, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, this guy's going to angry march home back to Williamsburg. He's not going to be able to suffer it. And it, in truth, you did get mad. You just directed it at other people. And not necessarily the people who were responsible for the match. But still, there was, it was a really strange pall that fell over everybody. Including in the press waiting outside. The rule, like the whole sort of like sitting outside the locker room thing, which we will of course talk about in Talking Points. It was very, very strange. We should talk about the match. It's important that we talk a little bit about the match. And I think maybe the first question to ask about the match is, would you agree with the assertion of the more optimistic members of the club that we saw the best play from NYCFC that we've seen this season in the first 30 minutes, you know, inclusive the Santi goal that opened our account for this year?
Yeah, 100%. It's obvious. And... cool, you know. I don't know where the to what end is that conversation is a different question, but yeah, cool. Look better at home, smaller field against a team that was willing to give up some possession, and the team is coming off of two losses, so they looked hungry at the beginning of the match at least, and you know, all the wrinkles we were hoping for, we started to see a lot of the turnovers and aimless playmaking started to at least come together a little bit more in that first half. You saw a lot much faster processing of the game, a lot more use of the underlap from the wings, a lot more better use of space, and the wingbacks played much more forward and were more involved, defensively very sound, and it seemed very cohesive, you know. I would just say, like, now looking back, it seems like more that should be the base level. That should be what you expect in a good game. It wasn't necessarily, we didn't blow the doors off. We created some good chances in that first half, and I'm happy about that. But I think that's it. And just to get specific, of course, Honest Wolf continues to impress. He looked more impressive than most players in the bad games, and he certainly stood out in this match as someone who was not just part of the team, but seemed to really drive a lot of the possessions that we had. And I really do like how he works with Santi. I understand why Cushing is so favorable, speaks so favorably about Honest Wolf and why he's been giving so much opportunity to start these matches, because he's seemed to have seamlessly integrated into this league, which is very difficult for new players to do. And he works very well with Santi. And Santi's a player that I think is extremely talented. I think he was very good in this game. I think Santi has what it takes to be a frontline MLS starter, certainly talent-wise. One thing you don't often hear about Santi is, like, easy to work with or easy to play on the field with, I would say. He's a great guy, but on the field he's, you know, extremely passionate. Temperamental is probably too negative, but Hannes and Santi seem to have a really good working relationship. Off the ball, this is why I love home games, is because you can see, like, off the ball going to corners, they talk to each other and work things out, and that's they have a good sense of communication, and that's extremely promising to see. Of course, that's 2 out of 11 players, but it was good to see those two continue the work, the glimpses that we saw in the first two matches, capitalize on that.
Okay. I mean, like, do you think that there's going to be, I don't know. Like more, do you see a model there for future play?
Yeah, I would say those two guys have to start next to each other and start frequently. You know, they're the only ones that seem to be putting up good numbers. So I would definitely say so.
What's the thing about the pairing that you see improving, and is there like room for improvement there? You know, or is it just building the rest of the field a little bit more around their connection?
I think they can just take more of the space, demand more, you know, control more of the space. Both offensively, they can start experimenting with runs. Once they get to know, like, it's all about time, obviously. Like, look, that's not in the way that the team and players and coaches have been talking about how it takes time, but more in the sense of, like, getting that chemistry together just to so it continues to be less thoughtful and more intuitive. But I would say also defensively, like just, you know, working the press a little more tight. It worked very well in this match as well, the press. But, you know, just you know, they're building the bands of chemistry together. It's very tight and very strong, and it's like, okay, let's start to separate it out, like pulling taffy, like, can they control more of the field and still be in touch with each other? That's what I'm going to look for next in that partnership.
Was there anything else that you saw, I don't know, among other players that could expand the offensive capabilities of this team?
Sure.
I mean, like, where did you feel like where was underdeveloped but still had possibilities?
I would say that...
Go ahead.
I would say that there's a big conversation that seemed to be happening about Munsif Bakrar, and I just don't want that conversation. I think it's very appropriate to criticize some of his finishing choices in this match. Outside of the offside goal, that was...
Like the choice to put the ball above the goal rather than inside of it?
Yeah, yeah. More so, it was his decision to put the ball directly into the keeper's belly every time the keeper slid down, as opposed to above him.
Yes.
On the offside goal,
but you know, it wasn't a choice. Choice wise, we can't really call it right. Like it's just trying. It's finishing. It's that nebulous thing. Great. Okay, finish better. The end.
Well, I just you
run some drills and you call it a day.
I think it's important though. Obviously, we saw the importance of it in this match when he had so many good opportunities that were squandered. But I don't want that importance to overshadow the good work he did. Getting in those positions, he's so good at getting into goal scoring positions, and he's so good at pressing and having a high motor and running for the whole 90 minutes. One of the very few players that did. I don't want that to get overshadowed by his lack of finishing, but the lack of finishing, like, it's this game was not a good look, but you know, finishing can be hot and cold. Players can go four or five games not figuring out that kind of touch and instinct, but and then they can go on a hot streak. I'm not willing to give up on him as a player. I'm just willing to acknowledge the faults that he had that were pretty costly at the same time, you know, appreciating the good things he did. And I think, you know, Andras Jason started in this match. Interesting choice. This was one of those games. I think Andras Jason is a player where if people are playing well around him, he'll find his niche. And I think he did extremely well in the first half, kind of just as the counterbalance to that Santi Hannes pairing, because we the majority of the plays went down that left side. But Jason did a good job as kind of rising to the occasion in that first half. And he was awful, much like any other player in the second half. So, like, you know, the kudos only go so far. But... And then, as I said before, the wingbacks looked better because they were more involved. They weren't getting pinned back by the opposition, so they were able to be more involved offensively, and that helped the team.
Let me ask you this. There was, I think, the insinuation from Cushing that Keaton Parks was not creating a productive... I'm going to take that again. That Keaton Parks was not creating a productive enough midfield, which was interesting, obviously, like in the light of the comments that we tweeted out from him. Do you feel the same way? Was Keaton Parks not enough of a part of this offense to make a really consistent threat, particularly in the second half?
Yeah,
he got subbed out.
In the second half, sure.
I mean, not before he got subbed out. That's not what I mean.
In the second half,
I'm
sure.
Conflating two things.
Offensively, But I don't know. I wouldn't single him out. I don't know. Like, he's a slow player, and you know that. So you build around that and go from there, because everything else he does extremely well. Ooh, excuse me. Sorry.
No, me too. I'm doing the exact same thing over here, brother. We're going to have to cut these burps out.
Nope. Staying
one in. By one.
Only if we had a Patreon and people paid for it, then I would cut it out. But this is a free podcast, so those are staying in.
If you own a t-shirt, we'll send you a burp free, we'll send you the whole season of episodes Burp 3 in October.
The thing is that what I think it should be appreciated, again, it's like a thing of, that's this whole match. It's like, we saw good things, we saw bad things. Keaton Parks, obviously, like, when we get stuck and when other teams have possession, this team is not built for it. I think Matt Doyle has had the perfect take on this match, where he said, like, yeah, the with the roster we have and with the tactics we're trying, making defensive substitutions or trying to play in a more condensed defensive block is not going to work. And so we get stuck, then Keaton looks bad, and he plays bad, but he looks bad when we get stuck in like that. But in the first half, a team without James Sands on the field absolutely dominated the midfield. Like, the press was working well enough to make them uncomfortable and to lose their structure in the midfield, and that helped. But for the most part, the Timbers were not losing their ball in their own third or even in their own half. They were losing the ball kind of right around the midfield line or right after it, whether it was forcing stupid mistakes or making good interceptions and tackles, winning the 50-50s and stuff like that. Like, I think that's all Keaton and Padilla, and it was really impressive for a team without James Sands to kind of force those mistakes in the first half. But yeah, it fell apart. It just fell apart.
So what happened, Trey? There's been no shortage of ink spilled about it, but why, what happened? Where did it all go?
I don't know. I'm without words. What do you want me to say? Like,
I don't know.
How do you watch that game and explain?
What's everyone saying? You know what I mean? Don't you, like, summarize what everybody else has said first, and then we'll admit that we have nothing to add.
It's less that. I think you could say anything. I think that you can say anything, and it contributes to it. I think it's an extension of a poor season last year. I think it's a bad... Now, I haven't been in the locker room, so I can't describe the vibes and energy, but there must be something going on. I'm sure, and I'll just say that the training ground was not very friendly or positive early this week. And I'll say that, you know, it has to be mentality, right? It has to be. This is something we talked about over and over again. You want to talk about Miami last year? This was that my game. This was that Miami game. This was dominating a team and then fucking losing it and not rising to the occasion in when it's most important. This is the DC United game where you just, if you don't show up, you give up. This is the end of the Charlotte game. This is the St. Louis game, the team losing their head. Like, the statistics, I can point to them all day, and I love pointing to statistics, but at the end of the day, when you're playing that well at home in the first half, what else can you blame such a collapse outside of, yeah, like, a coach overcoached, that reacted too strongly to the game and just didn't keep... Mm-hmm. Like, it's so crazy to me that Nick Cushing, a player who I sat in Red Bull Arena when we were losing to the Red Bull and saw him make... what, one sub in the 89th minute, maybe? Or two subs in the 89th minute, and that's it? How is that the same coach that when you're leading, you decide you need to kind of hunker down or not play for possession? Like, Justin Heck is a, you know, he's shown a wide variety of skills, and he's not, I think he's talented enough to be in the league, but I don't know if he's like a ball chaser or someone who is going to solidify the defense in a way that will allow you to also keep the good things going that you were doing. And I think that when you take off like a Hannes Wolf, yeah, like, you're going to lose the guy who the offense was revolving around. Like, that is the guy. Mm-hmm. And how obvious was it when he left? Like, Santi was not going to carry that offense all on his own. And Julian tried to and spectacularly failed. And and it just was not happening. It was not working. And Jovan is a fucking baby who was just was not that didn't have the creators behind him. It seemed obvious to me that you could feel it. You could feel this game got stale at the end of the coming into the second half, and it led and like I, you know what I think, is that the game was stale in the first 10 minutes of the second half. And Cushing got scared. He got scared seeing that. He said, I have to change something.
So you're like, it's the coaching scared symptom.
Yeah, because I got it. I felt it too. I felt that first 10 minutes. You're like, oh, we do not look the same. Mm-hmm. And but the decision to like kind of overcorrect was the wrong one. I mean, I get it. He's coaching for his fucking job. And the team needed to win. But it wasn't, it didn't make sense. It sucks. He had a 17 at the blackjack table. I don't play blackjack, so I don't know if this is a good analogy. He had a insert appropriate number here hand at blackjack, which is really low, but he didn't want to hit or else he thought he would bust. So he played a low hand and he got fucking creamed by the dealer.
Yes, right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right, despite the fact that you don't play blackjack. Not like me, who won $200 at a casino in Niagara Falls, Canada.
Congrats. Canadian
dollars too, which are worth more.
I say all that to say, like, I don't
or less.
The tactics is certainly a big, like, the second half coaching choices and management and all of these things are certainly a big part of why we lost this game. But I really think you can blame that all you want and like fucking, you know, add it to the file of reasons you don't want Nick Cushing to be a coach. But that I would add more papers to that file under team mentality and general sentiment in that locker room, more so than the substitution choices he made. Because he can coach scared and make those choices. If the team is like fighting for a win, you know, they could still pull it out, but they couldn't.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. No, I mean, I think that, you know, we were the ones who sort of, we're the ones who tweeted out some remarks about the, not just about the coaching and not just about the sort of the coaching scared or the basking in one goal leads, but about the, from the coaching perspective, but also from the player perspective in terms of there being, right, it's a very young team. This is the
23.
And now we're getting into
even.
It's so hard not to have the conversation. Yes, the youngest in MLS this year on average. It's very hard to have new conversations about such a cataclysmically bad match. Everyone has already been talking about it. It's Tuesday. Every talking point is dead in the water. But the thing that sticks with you the most is, right, like that there's not an understanding of how to preserve a lead, how to secure a brace, how to like retain focus for 90 minutes. It's just not feeling like a professional team. Not right now. Not yet. Which is also, I think, to just to give it a little bit of room to breathe, why I think some folks are sympathetic to Cushing's perspective here. Where he's like, all part of the plan. Because, of course it is. Like, of course, how could you expect a team like this, with so many new bodies and so many young brains on the side, to be more disciplined than they already are? The silver lining available here is that there is the possibility of an extraordinary come-to-Jesus moment. And so, despite the fact that it is fun and interesting and exciting, and also, like, important to hold Cushing accountable, to amplify discord, to communicate that the fans are not happy, that the community is not satisfied with what's going on here, to cry for Cushing out. At the same time, I can appreciate that there is still, this can go one of two ways, right? It can become so toxic as to eat itself alive, or it can be the nadir, you know what I mean? This, it can be the rock bottom that inspires people who've maybe never experienced that before to get their shit together and to take themselves to a new level in terms of how they pursue, how they activate their talents, their demonstrated talents. You know, nobody on this team is satisfied with what these results look like. Nobody on this team thinks they are the kind of person who should be bearing those results on their back. The question is it going to be a come together where they all agree that they have that problem together, including the coach? Or is it going to be, just like the dissolution of the Soviet Union?
Yeah, I just keep asking myself, like, who's the tone setter? Who's the person who's telling everyone else it's not good enough? It's not the coach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it there might even be like, okay, here's brace yourself for an ESPN take. And I call it an ESPN take because it means it's bad journalism rooted in speculation and not yes, supported yes, by yes. facts. I still, from everything I've heard, the Chanot debacle rests extremely minimally, if not almost entirely separate from Nick Cushing. He was playing Chanot. He did not bench Chanot. He did not limit his minutes or anything like that. I think Nick Cushing was a big fan of Chanot. The problem is that I think when something like that happens, when someone that's been here for so long and wins so much and is the connective tissue from the winning DNA of years previous, and is also a tone setter and a fucking ball buster and someone that will keep you accountable, when they leave in that fashion, I wonder if the aftershocks still reverberate to this day. Because I look in that locker room.
Speak on that.
I just don't know. I don't know anyone that has that same kind of personality or that same kind of...
Mm-hmm.
That leadership is such a stupid word, but like that same level of like almost stubbornness, you know, where they're willing to hold other people accountable and they're not afraid to, and they're not afraid to get in fights. They're not afraid to have Talos Magnos flip the fucking bird at them. They're not afraid of those moments. They're willing to say and do the things that will cause those moments. And it's just every time I hear Nick Cushing, I just don't know if that's coming from him or if it's coming from anyone else. Cause I know all the other players and I don't know if I can characterize any of them as that kind of leader. I think Thiago Martins can be a great leader.
Do you think any of them,
but I don't know if he's not that kind.
Have the potential to become that.
Go
right?
down the,
like over the
mentally,
course of, even of this year,
mentally in your head, go down the roster and see if you could pick a name.
You pick one too.
I can pick a name. I just told you.
No, make one. Pick one. Pick what? Pick the person most likely.
I mean, I guess it's all on Thiago Martins' head, right? Who else is it?
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Because you know what? It's not just Chanot that left. It's Anton Tinnerholm. It's Sean Johnson. Sean Johnson was so important.
Yes.
So, and yeah, we'll talk right. about him. And like Maxi Morales isn't that kind of leader. He's a leader because of he earns respect. Like he talks softly and carries a big fucking stick, and the players love him and respect him. But, you know, I hope he's holding the players accountable. But he's not there. You know, he's there, but he's not there.
Yeah. That's right.
Did you come up with a name?
Yeah, no, you're right. No, absolutely
exactly.
not. Exactly. No. Can't be done.
Is it Mehdi Bellucci? I don't know. I saw Santi fucking curse him out. I hope it is. Maybe that's a sign that he is that guy.
You want to talk about Freeze?
Like what?
You said we want to talk about... Sean John. I thought you meant... You were talking about
that,
Sean Johnson.
Okay, me mentioning
you were
Sean Johnson...
intimating that you wanted to talk
nope.
about Freeze.
And me mentioning Sean Johnson has nothing to do with Matt Freeze or his leadership personality, anything like that. It is not That was not a dig.
What were you saying then?
That we lost a person of that personality, you know? Because the thing about Sean Johnson...
We will talk about it.
Yeah, because we're going to play Toronto next.
Oh, I see. I misunderstood.
No worries. What else? How was your...
I don't know, dude.
How do you like... You don't talk to the players often. How was that for you?
Oh, it's always so stressful, dude. I mean, are we on talking points yet?
Is there anything else from this match?
No, I don't. Who wants it?
I haven't watched any replays. I didn't read anything. Like, I just have...
Everybody else's podcasts are out. Go, you know, if you want to wallow, go wallow somewhere else. Yeah. It doesn't matter. I don't give a shit. We give a shit. We give very much of a shit. But there's not that much
I care
to say.
Too much. Now I'm heated again. Oh, Jesus Christ. It's not good enough.
Was Bakrar offsides?
I have no idea. I like the goal he scored.
They didn't play the replay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good goal. I don't think so. To me, it was a cheat. And it would have changed the tempo of the game, of course. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Because it's so shameful the way that the game was conducted anyways. All right, here's the Talking Points theme song.
Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points.
Hey Trey, talking points theme number one. I haven't said a word to you about the because I keep forgetting about the season 10 theme.
Oh yeah,
it's great.
Oh sure,
it's so fun.
It's a little stumbly and volume weird, but I was like in a desperate place making that, so whatever.
Yeah, you got it together.
But
it's classic.
I'm still old
to me,
school.
It's classic.
I still dig for samples, and I dug for that sample. I will never make something with an obvious or popular sample. Never.
Wow.
My rule is like 50,000 or less listens on YouTube. I try to go even lower than that.
Mr. Crates, the digital crates. Very impressive. Pulled it off. Keep on finding new ways of hearing Stevie Harvey.
Okay, talking point number one, done.
Done. All right, fantastic. Yeah, it was fun talking to the players. Do we want to talk about the way in which we were coached into talking to the players?
I don't know.
All right, we don't have to go into it. Here's the long and short of it, folks. And we're going to see sort of, you know, we're going to tell you about the policy.
I'll let you talk about
it. We're working with. That's, I think, wise. Essentially, we were, you know, the press box was gathered at halftime, and they told us that we'll name any names here. You know, we work hand in hand with folks from the office. Sometimes the relationship is affable, sometimes less so. We were told that we wouldn't be going into the locker room after the game. We were trying a new thing where the pool waited outside the locker room and then, you know, what, no less than five players would be made available for comment or something like that. There was some sort of vague numerical promise of player availability, not unlike a Zoom press conference. This did not sit well with many of the press, of the press corps. Some of whom did some quick Googling and slacking and discovered that, yes, indeed, the Major League Soccer policy is that the locker room shall be opened to press 15 minutes following the conclusion of the match. And lo and behold, when we got down to outside the press room and stood in our doofy little stage door line, waiting for our favorite players to come out so they could sign our playbills and talk to us about the match, there was a sign standing right in front of the doorway that said, "By order of MLS Commissioner Don Garber, the locker room will be open to press 15 minutes after the conclusion of the match." Now, we talked to a lot of people about this. And, you know, some people were like, this is better. Some people were like, fuck this. Some people were like, the Red Bulls do this every match, right? Like, it's really variable across the league how well this is enforced. And you made the fair point that it doesn't really matter whether it's better or worse, and it doesn't really matter whether other people do it or they don't. What matters, we're not opening a debate about the validity of the results of the change so much as the validity of the change itself based on the rules. And I think that that was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
We prefer it.
You already have gone even longer than I would have if I were to speak about it diplomatically, because people don't care about the inside baseball stuff. They don't care.
Oh, sure. But that's what Talking Points is for.
But
the point is, okay, you're right. I went on too long. But the point, the reason that I'm bringing any of it up is because what we do is vibes based, right?
Yeah.
What we do is a little bit more discursive. It's a lot about, and you especially, where you do your best journalism, I think is like, and what you do that I don't think anybody else really can do. And I always feel this way when I go to the matches and watch you do your thing, is that you have real conversations. That's a hard thing for a press to do. Because, you know, you're trying to get, like, specific angles. You're trying to talk about specific things. There's a level of intimidation just by the nature of the way that the thing is set up. And you always, I think, like, open... And I don't just mean, like, sidebars, right? Like, even when everybody else is around, you're still very good at opening up real conversations with players, making them feel like they're talking to... I mean, I don't know, making them feel whatever. But, like, giving them a sense of you and talking like a person to them, in a way that it helps them to open up and gets a little bit more specific than just the sort of generic, like, oh, yeah, we tried and we need to find better results and we're going to give it our all the next time we go out. You know, like, it's deadly, but everybody does the same thing. It's a sort of like song and dance of like, okay, we did their jobs. You go farther than that. And you get real rewards for that when you're in the room with them, right? When you can have a sort of a sidebar conversation, when you can develop a real relationship because you're chatting, not just sneaking in your cheeky little question or whatever. And I think that that's the shame for us, right? To say nothing of people who are really writing more long form work, not just hits, reactions, audio clips, people who are actually composing stories, which is also you via the outfield, you know? That stuff requires deeper access than what this kind of setup provides.
Yeah, I feel like there's an implicit, if not explicit, compliment for me in there, and I appreciate that and whatever. But sure, and
I think it's pretty explicit.
Yeah,
I don't think I was shy about it.
I appreciate it. Look, you said it well, I mean, I probably would have said exactly the same words you said this whole time. I'm tired of talking about it because it's an ongoing situation, and we'll deal with it. It's more so the long and short of it is this. MLS media policy is one thing. The team has ascribed to it, and I appreciate them for doing so. They decided not to in this match, and that's it. There's a policy, and they didn't oblige, and that's it. So we'll see what happens. But you know, I reread Pablo Maurer's piece in The Athletic that he wrote in September of last year about how teams. It was Messi focused because obviously Inter Miami is breaking every single fucking media policy with Messi. And look, I understand to some extent why you would, of course. It's more so.
Yeah, if I'm that front office, I'm happily breaking those rules and I'll take the fines.
But
like,
he also talked about.
It's still broken.
He talked about how in the wake of COVID that some teams had just, you know, FC Dallas last week was finally got back to opening the locker room after COVID. Mm-hmm. And like, it's just, as you said, like if you're some people think it's inappropriate to be in the locker room. Some people don't think it's necessary. And I 100% sympathize with that. And I get it. And I know it. And I know if it's not your preference or you think it's antiquated and all these things, I would say like personally for me, for what I do and for what I want to do, I really want to write more stories this year. It's something that's super beneficial to me. And, but that's here nor there because end of the day, and this is it. I don't want to talk any more about this. There's a media policy. They broke it. That's it. And if they want to get mad at me for saying that on the podcast, they can. It's the truth. That's what happened.
Yeah. I wouldn't worry too much about it.
I'm not worried. I mean, I have a good relationship with those guys. It was just after a bad match. I got a little heated.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll stand behind at least that last sentence I said.
Do we want to talk about
the branding? I talked to Brad branding. Sims, but whatever.
That's right.
I interviewed Brad Sims.
Yeah, I'm sure that was fun.
It was fun.
The branding. It's cool. I liked it. It's fun. It's a little try hard, I would say. But I think it will... My feeling is like it will settle into itself in a way that is better and fully integrated. I find the font choice in particular... And there are some icons that I'm like, that's not, what are those arrows? Those arrows aren't particular, those arrows aren't New York. You sort of set this impossible challenge for yourself when you say like, okay, we're rebranding to make it more New York. Because the character of New York is really hard to capture without being incredibly cheesy. You know what I mean? But I think that they did that 75%. And that the other 25% will come out in the wash over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I find it hard to... not appreciate it, like not to think it's better, because I think you just get used to the old branding for so long that a change is always welcome. However, I'm willing to separate myself from that and understand, like, no, I actually do like a lot of the aspects of the change, especially the font. I'll say I was not a fan of this whole, like, oh, we're no longer NYCFC. Don't call us that. We can't say that in the internally, all that stuff. Initially, I thought that was stupid, and that was, like, an overly corpo thing. But I appreciate the team, the media team of NYCFC, giving us the access to talk to Brad Sims. Look at that, me being nice, and see, we're all good. Everything's copacetic. I really do appreciate it, obviously, and the team's been better about, you know, those kinds of availabilities. But in that... what were you
going to
say?
Never mind, go ahead.
No, say it.
Nothing. Nothing. I was just going to say which they happily reminded you of on Saturday.
I'll say it's always good to talk to Brad. You know, it's Sims. I'm not on a first name basis with him. That he's a CEO. So... you know, you're fully aware of what lines he's used with other people before and whatever. But at the same time that he's, you know, pretty easy to talk to, etc. But I actually do like his explanation as to why the team changed from... and wants to be called, as much as possible, New York City FC. And it's that the idea that NYCFC... people still, to this day, Apple announcers still fuck it up. They still fucking say NYFC. And that if you're saying it to someone on the street, oh, I went to watch NYCFC, that could fucking might as well be APAC or whatever. It could be anything. It could be anything. Any five-letter acronym. You know, it's hard to differentiate.
It could be APAC.
And that through their market research, they found that a surprisingly large amount of people understand that when FC is at the end of something, it means soccer. And you can see when FIFA, the video game series, lost the licensing of FIFA, they switched to EAFC. And I think that's the same kind of, you understand it's soccer when you say FC. That's kind of a growing American understanding. But when you say football club, people are like, oh, you go New York City Football Club. It's like you guys go and play football in the park. Like American football. So that's why they stay away from that as well. So saying New York City FC, also the only team in the city that uses city. We're the only team, like, we're like one of the only teams based in New York City. And then using New York City in the name, we are the only team. You know, you have Giants, Jets, Yankees, Mets. Nets is Brooklyn. And New York Knicks are New York Knicks, not New York City Knicks. So having city is like, a lot of people are like, oh, they want to emphasize it as part of CFG, but it's not. It's completely separate from that. It's about being part of New York City, and I think that's what they want to lean into there. So after that discussion with Brad Sims, I completely understand why they went through this. I get it. We are still going to say NYCFC. The people that listen to this podcast, the people, you know, all the fans that have been here for a long time are used to saying NYCFC, and we'll still use that shorthand, but... I understand if you're trying to grow new fans ahead of a stadium opening, you want to try to appeal to the most people as possible. And the fact that they used a big New York City design firm as well as a boutique New York City design firm, I like that.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. I think there's a lot to... You know who would actually, I'm thinking about this now, but that sort of, you remember when they converted the iHeart NY logo to like a sort of like emoji variety thing? The icons actually sort of remind me of that. So it's like, even the branding that I don't like is in conversation with the branding that they are, that's being advanced like in and around the city. But we should talk probably a little bit about a bit of branding that's equally as important, and that is the branding of three spatial dimensions. Trey, the cube was revealed this week.
I like it. You like it?
I do like it. I like Madison Cube Garden, as you so as you so well named it on the Twitters.
That was not me. That girl that got married on the day of the cup. I forgot her name. She tweeted out that joke.
Nicole.
Yes.
Yep, you're right. It was Nicole's joke. You just retweeted it. Fuck! Well, she's right. She crushed it. Crazy. It is cool. It's cool. It's a little...
Kuehl, gaudy, Harry Kuehl, legendary Liverpool player and Australian. Harry Kuehl.
It looks a little like, okay, so part of me is like, okay, this looks like a soccer stadium. It's cool. It doesn't, you know, it's not oblong like a football stadium. It's nice. It reminds me, it's shape-wise, it feels a little bit like, you know, a Prem League stadium. But at the same time, it also looks like the Javits Center. You know, I'm not so horny for it that I am sans skepticism. But I kind of think that element of it will be softened in realization. You know, it's sort of like the hyper corporate rendering thing of new architecture.
Yeah.
I think that it will actually get a little less Javits Center in being built.
Yeah, it's
at least that's my hope.
It's unfortunate that, you know, Brad Sims also mentioned that the stadium is, it's, you know, we're still going to be dwarfed by Citi Field, but he mentioned that like Citi Field was built before certain airline guidelines were made about flight paths and stuff. That's why Mets games, the fucking planes are right above you. So we had to follow those guidelines, and that's why our stadium is smaller than Citi Field, or shorter, I should say. But it is still 8 stories tall, and the cube is 7 stories tall. And I just hope it's not too bright, because I'm an old man. I'm like, I don't want to get blinded by screens.
Sure, you got to show up with sunglasses. Well, it's not going to matter, because when you show up in your Apple Vision Pro, it's just going to put, that's what's going to map things onto that LED screen in the first place. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Nothing. I just thought of a cool, if you had an Apple Vision Pro, you could use it to, you could put ad block on it, and then you could just look around and take all the ads out of your, you know what I mean? Like it would eliminate. I just came up with a genius idea that I'm sure the people at Adblock are already coming up with.
Cool. I like it. Next.
I'm out. Let's do a 5-minute recap of Toronto.
Sure.
All right. How much are we going to lose by? Oh, Toronto on a hot streak.
Yeah.
Toronto looking good.
Yeah.
Toronto looking sexy. Yeah. Us, not so much. Yeah. What's the shot here? I mean, okay. Again, until things start turning around, I'm just going to be praying for goals. I don't care about wins. Give me goals. At home, give me wins. Give me a point. But in the world, prove to me that we can find the back of the net. How do we get goals in this match?
Well, that's great against, I believe, the only team that has not given up a goal this year. so perfect. And unfortunately, even in that context, likely the easiest game we have over the next month or so.
Jesus Christ.
Yep. So I would buffet it with that. Firstly, okay, just a quick side tangent. Criticize Nick Cushing all you want. Don't bring his fucking women's coaching experience into this conversation. You dumb, misogynist, idiot pieces of shit. We just lost to Phil Neville, a guy who sucked at coaching women, like was awful at it. And we are now facing John Herdman, who went from New Zealand women's team made that a respectable organization, to the Canadian women's team, made them a powerhouse, to the men's Canadian team, who got them to the World Cup for the first time in 22 years, to Toronto, where he's now turned around this fucking dumpster fire of a team, and now they look like an extremely respectable team. So I don't want to hear about women's soccer coaching and what it has to do with men's coaching. If you can coach, you can coach. And if you can't, you can't. Okay? I think I'm being clear
okay.
about
that. Okay. Deal.
I'll say this, is that, yeah, Herdman's done a good job. Obviously, like, how many stories did we read about how toxic that locker room was last year in Toronto? He's turned it around. They're playing a brand new system. The big talking point is Bernardeschi is now playing right wing back. I'm not going to say he's unfamiliar with that role. He kind of played a somewhat sort of that during various stretches at Juve. And he looks great at it, of course. Like, if anything, it helps because it limits the amount of selfishness, influence, usage rate, if you want to say that, of Bernardeschi. Like, he's become more part of the system than the opposite side of Insigne. Like, Insigne is going to be a gravity hole for the ball. And you live and die with that, right? Like, Insigne is always going to have the ball, and he's going to not pass as frequently as you would want. But having him and Bernardeschi feel like they had that responsibility last year at the same time really tanked that team's ability to be multidimensional. Now you have Bernardeschi playing a wingback position. It actually helps kind of balance that out a lot better. On top of that, you have Insigne just playing at a better level than he did last year. He says that he was hurt for a lot of last year and still played. Regardless, I'm very familiar with Insigne. I've watched him a lot in my lifetime, and I will tell you, like, you just don't. He can just score at any moment. I mean, two of his goals this year are just phenomenal individual pieces of finishing skill, and out of nowhere goals. Just can just scores when he wants. Like, this incredible level of finesse that he possesses as a player, and it's terrifying. And I hope Mitja Lenić is ready for the challenge of guarding Lorenzo Insigne, because I'm terrified of him, especially now. I watched all three of the Toronto games, and they fixed their defense a lot. They've kind of pasted over where there was bad discrepancies. They had Crescito, like, last year, who just didn't care about the league, and they had Omar Gonzalez they got rid of, so they've plastered that over with some more veterans. They... Osorio's now a DP, and he's a real vocal leader of the team. They got back Richie Larea, who's a very good player. And the last thing you have to know about Toronto is that after watching these three games, I can hereby claim Sean Johnson is back. I hinted at it after that podcast we did after Charlotte. I said I watched Sean Johnson do Sean Johnson things in that first Toronto game. And he's still doing it. He has reclaimed kind of this ability to lead the team, control the tempo of the match, and make excellent saves. Like, we know he can.
Damn, fuck.
So, and that's...
He's not looking so hot.
That's a guy who... I was listening to Sean. He did an interview with Quincy Ameriquois, like, in 2021, maybe even 2020. Where he was talking about how going from Chicago to New York, like, it taught him how to go from a bad locker room to a stable locker room. And I think he's using that intelligence kind of to ride out last year, where he was a subpar goalkeeper last year. He had one of the worst years of his career last year. One of his worst, if you contextualize NYCFC inside of it. A below average year for a goalkeeper. And then it seems like he's reset, you know, everything, and is a lot more comfortable. And sometimes that's what needs to happen, is just kind of a new coach and a re-stabilization of the chemistry of the locker room, and most importantly, some good results. And they fought hard to make it happen. Like, this is kind of like the Timbers, but with more talent. Like, the idea of of needing to have a new coach in there to stabilize things. And as I said last week about Portland, squeeze water out of a rock, which I couldn't have been more fucking right about Portland. That's exactly what they did against us. And Toronto's the same way, but they have Lorenzo Insigne.
Trey, what's the scoreline against Lorenzo Insigne?
0-0.
Okay. Sure. Great.
I don't know.
I'd take it. Be happy to take it. Yeah, I'll co-sign a 0-0. No, it's going to be a... Okay, we don't predict losses. It's a 1-1 draw. 1-1 draw, I get my goal. It's lots of fun. I don't know who gets it. 1-1 draw, Mijatovic gets his first goal of the season. Finally see some results from training.
I'm very proud of us to go this full hour and not speculate about the job of Nick Cushing.
What can you say? It's not going anywhere this week.
And it doesn't matter what we say. So I'm happy we have not done that. Because what's the point? Yeah. We see what's happening, and that's all we can do is see and react. Speculation is whatever.
Trey, if you were going to tweet Cushing out, where would you tweet it at?
Trey Fillmore, what about you?
At Jake Beckhard, and you can find us both at Blue Balls Pod. You know the deal. linktr.ee/BlueBallsNYCFC. Go grab some merch. Go grab, go follow. Give us a follow. Give us a like. Give us a review. We haven't asked for reviews in a long time, but just, be our pal. Be our sweetie. Send us some notes. We'd love to hear from you, and we will see you on the other side of Toronto, my friends. Bye.
Bye.
Deuces.